gentlemen, may I have your attention?
Hello and welcome to another episode of Radio Teco News. My name is Monty Rossetti. We are only a couple months away from the midterm elections, and San Francisco has a lot going on that we need to focus on. One of those elections is the crucial district attorney election. The SFDA position has been one of national focus with the recall of former DA Chesa Boudin and the current work of Mayor London Breed's appointment, Brooke Jenkins. On today's show, I spoke to John Hamasaki. John is running for the DA position against Brooke Jenkins, and on this episode, we talk about his motives to run, his past as the police commissioner, and why Charles Barkley needs to come back to SF and let us give him a tour of our beautiful city. Thank you for listening to Radio Teco. We want to continue to be connected to our community, so please leave us a rating and review. There's a great chance your review will be read on a future episode. All right, I'm here with a special guest, John Hamasaki. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. No place I'd rather be on a beautiful Friday afternoon.
It is a very, very nice day, and I'm hoping for a very nice episode, at least on my end. I trust you. You're going to have all the great answers. I don't trust myself very much, but it's okay. That's an issue I got to deal with on my own. But yeah, hopping into to you and getting to know you. Where are you from originally?
I was born and raised in Miami, Florida.
Nice, nice. Miami. So what made you go from one coast to the other?
As an Asian American, I grew up with some pretty unpleasant, bullying and harassment, in Miami and then later in other places. And so I wanted to move somewhere with a big Asian culture, a big Asian community where I felt like I would, you know, fit in better and it wouldn't be an issue being Asian. And so it was LA or San Francisco, and I felt like LA was a lot like Miami, so I wanted to try San Francisco, moved here, and have been here 28 years now.
Not bad. 28 years, and I'm happy you decided San Francisco over LA. As an SF native, that's always a good answer. Speaking about, you know, Asian Americans, and obviously we do have a big community and a long history here in San Francisco. Currently, how do you feel about, it seems like, you know, the Asian American community is being used as pawns for conservative talking points. How do you feel about that? Knowing that, I mean, if anybody follows you on social media, you're not a conservative person yourself. How do you feel about that? And kind of that, I don't know what you're going to call it, mixing of the media, mixing of words or all that stuff. What do you think about all that?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard for me to hear and hard for me to see the way people have weaponized the very real pain and fear and, after all of the Asian bias coming out of the Trump administration, and then we were seeing it more and more on the streets, and we have people getting, you know, elders and women, I think primarily being attacked, being beat up. And so, you know, it's a very real issue that's causing a lot of pain in the Asian American community. So, you know, there's some people who decided to weaponize that, to use it for their political purposes. And, you know, for me, I'm pretty uncomfortable with that because it's preying on a very real emotional and sort of social connection that has been breaking down, and taking that and using that to advance conservative politics. And so, people who weren't our friends before now are wanting to use us to enact their policies or elect their candidates. And, you know, I'm pretty uncomfortable with the way You know, some of the more prominent ones like Leanna Lewy have been out there espousing racism and anti-Semitism, and the same politicians continue to cater to her. You know, the conservatives have not denounced her. They've not asked, they didn't ask her to step down. And so, you know, it's the problem with it to me, are the, one of the big problems is it's assuming that her viewpoint is shared by Asian Americans. And I don't think that's true. I don't think, you know, the vast majority of Asian Americans are anti-Black or anti-Semitic. But by embracing her, that's the representation of Asian America that they've censored. And so that's been pretty upsetting to me.
So let's also pivot now, San Francisco as a whole. San Francisco the last few years has gotten a negative connotation for being unsafe and dirty. I think of Charles Barkley when the Warriors were in the finals and he went on national television talking about how this is a dirty city and all this other stuff. And it's created this, I don't know, it's like this image now in San Francisco that that's the way it is here. What's your opinion of San Francisco's current state? And on top of that, how did you think San Francisco got to where it is today in whatever state that you think San Francisco is in?
I mean, I think, you know, I've been here 28 years. I think San Francisco is one of the most beautiful cities in the world, has the best people, has a lot of culture and history within it. It's a welcoming city. It's welcoming to immigrants. It's welcoming to people who are visiting. But, you know, San Francisco has a history of being associated with Democrats and especially liberalism. And so it's been a target of the right and the far right for a number of years. Everybody thinks we're still in the 60s and we're hippies. And that's, you know, really not the case if you spend any time here. But, you know, it's we're on Fox News, as you know, every week, or talking about the dirty streets, the Democrats, and all, you know. And there's also some people here who, again, politicized, you know, some of the negative things. And we do have challenges here. We have, you know, we're struggling right now with folks that are unhoused, folks that, you know, during the pandemic were pushed, more people were pushed outside onto the streets. And, you know, we have people struggling with substance abuse, and that's become really big since, or even worse since, fentanyl became the sort of cheap drug of choice. And then we also have, you know, mental health issues here. And so, you know, to me, the problem is we've tried, or at least certain political leaders have tried to solve homelessness, solve substance abuse, solve mental health issues through policing and criminalization. And, you know, I'm a four-year police commissioner. I have worked in the criminal justice system my entire career. You know, those are public health, social services issues. They're not, you know, they may enter into the criminal realm when you know, things get out of hand. But generally, you need to start off with the recognition that these are city hall problems. These are problems of our government and that our government hasn't adequately addressed. And so, you know, now we have the state that we're in today where, you know, you go down some streets, Charles Barkley was right. You go down a lot of streets, he's wrong, right? It's very narrow areas, like in the Tenderloin, in parts of South of Market. But the rest of the city is beautiful. And I, you know, and when I heard Charles say that, I was like, you know, it didn't sound right, because for those of us who live here, and those of us that love the city, you know, I have my almost 2 weeks shy of 8-year-old son. We go everywhere, and it's a blast to be in the city. There's great parks, there's great people, there's, you know, we can always find somebody to play with, there's sports. And so, you know, I think Charles was reflecting the national narrative that's kind of come out of the conservative movement, you know, and you know, I don't think he knew any better, but you know, one of us could have given him a tour and I think he would have felt very differently.
Charles, if you're listening to this, come back to San Francisco. We'll give you a tour. I think he's just mad that the Warriors are such a, you know, dominant force and he just can't take it. I don't know. Maybe.
I think there was some of that to it.
Oh, man. But going to what you're talking about, I do agree. It is definitely an issue that needs to be resolved in City Hall. So before the current DA, and we will talk about current DA Brooke Jenkins in a second, I do want to go back to the previous DA who was recalled back in June, Chesa Boudin. He was on our show a few weeks ago and we talked about how he was elected and brought in January 2020. And then 2 months into his term, we had this worldwide pandemic. And obviously it creates this shift, this unexpected movement into people just trying to survive. And a lot of the things that is the conservative narrative that Charles Barkley was spewing out on national television are things that here locally were blamed on former District Attorney Chesa Boudin. What is your opinion over Chesa Boudin's two and a half year term as district attorney?
I think that I don't know that he got much of a chance during those 2 years to show what he could do in office and how his policies would work and impact positively the criminal justice system. You know, from the start, we had the police union and the local Republican Party talking about a recall. They tried it once and it failed. And then, out of town, dark money, Republican money flowed in and they were able to spend $7+ million. And, you know, what that did and what we've learned since then is they paid a lot of people to be protesters, to, you know, speak out as people who are concerned citizens. But, you know, now we're learning these people were paid off and paid pretty well. And so, you know, I think the DA, the former DA was, you know, really always on defensive because he was getting blamed for, you know, when there was a car break-in, right? A car break-in, you know, street level crime, that's the job of the police. But the police union was able to shift the narrative away from people blaming them by blaming on the DA. And I think, you know, in their to their credit, they were pretty effective at that. You know, what we've seen since the recall and the appointment of the new district attorney is, you know, nothing's really changed, right? We haven't seen any evidence that having a tough on crime, war on drugs DA is doing anything to positively impact our streets, positively impact, you know, all of the communities of San Francisco. And so I think in a sense, former District Attorney Boudin was the canary in the coal mine on criminal justice reform. He went in with a lot of great plans and great ideas. You know, some of them worked. I think some of them there was some issues with. But it was never about his policies. It was always about taking what we call the moderates in San Francisco, which, you know, elsewhere might be Republicans or conservatives. I think they saw an opportunity to take this seat away through the recall process and get to be able to appoint somebody that they preferred and that was on their team. And there's, I think, a lot of reasons for that. But to say this was some grassroots movement of concerned people, I think it became, you know, there was, you know, I talked to some good and decent people who believed a lot of what they had heard because they heard it from, you know, it was what historically have been maybe not fully credible sources, but like, hey, you flip on the local news, you pick up the local paper, and you expect to get at least the truth. But, you know, I think there was a lot of interest in demonizing the district attorney, and in a way that I thought was unfair. You know, it's fine to criticize somebody. I have criticisms of everybody. People should have criticisms of me, but you got to be honest about it. You know, you can't do all of this disinformation, you know, putting out information that's false, and you know, using a lot of social media bots and tools, which I think some of them were also paid to you know, try to overthrow a political rival. It's been I'll say, you know, you mentioned the pandemic. I don't know that this would have happened outside of the pandemic. I think that people were tired, they were scared, they were worn down. We were stuck inside our houses, and you know, so we weren't really socializing and getting out. People were like, "Oh, San Francisco's going to hell." Like, and you know, the famous response for a while was touch grass, right? Get out, get outside, go to the park, touch some grass. It's a beautiful city. But you know, I have some sympathy for people who were going through a very hard time. I think it was hard on everybody's mental health. You know, just a lack of social interaction. And you know, watching all of this social media and videos and so forth, and a lot of, you know, real negativity towards the district attorney, I think created the broader support for the recall outside of the conservatives. They started the process, but, you know, once the media came in and was sharing these stories and sharing them with a certain angle, you know, I think it was a pretty hard position to be in. Instead of talking about the good things you're doing, you're spending all of your time talking about how, no, that's not true. Here's documents proving it. Here's evidence proving it. And so, yeah, it was a weird and not great time.
No, it wasn't. And you're right. I do agree. I think the pandemic definitely heightened people's senses when it came to, I don't know. Yeah, the car break-ins that you're talking about, or you know, and everything was somehow Chesapeake's fault. In the last year, we've had three recalls in California: the governor, Board of Education, and the district attorney. Now, say you win this election, and knowing you said also a very crucial word that's been used a lot is misinformation. How will you avoid something similar happening with what you're trying to do in San Francisco? Because, you know, everyone that's going to try to create change, obviously you're going to have that little group in the corner that's going to try to like stir the pot and create all this misinformation. How do you think somebody, a politician in 2022, can avoid all of these attacks that you know, Chesapeake had to deal with, Gabriela López, Board of Education, had to deal with? Yeah, how would you go ahead and deal with all that?
Right. So, you know, one of the reasons that I stepped in was because there was some really good people who were interested in running, but they didn't want to be subject to the abuse, to the harassment, to the threats from anonymous accounts. You know, I had somebody just a week or two ago saying they were going to beat me up in a DM. And it's much worse for a woman or a person of color or a woman of color. And so good people didn't want to get in. I, you know, from being on the police commission and being active on Twitter and social media, I'd kind of been through it for the last few years. I have my own troll army that's always in my comments. I think that was an exceptional time, being the pandemic. I think that as people are getting out and having lives again, I don't know if people are going to be as susceptible to the disinformation that's being put out there. I don't know if everybody's, I'm hopeful that we've turned a corner. I don't know that we have yet, but I think this election can be part of that. Is, you know, let's have a fair and honest discussion about crime, the causes of crime, the approaches to crime, and, you know, put aside the you know, really unhealthy toxicity that we've seen in social media over the last few years. It's been coming at me since I jumped in, but I don't know. You know, it's some things that are completely false. People are sharing, but I don't see it getting traction because Chase had a national army of trolls and even Republican politicians. I remember seeing Ted Cruz tweet when he was recalled. It was a big operation for the right and the far right. You know, Tucker Carlson, Fox News, all of those people were focused on him because part of it, and I think a big part of why it was such a national thing, was his parents, and they were able to say, oh, he's the son of the Weather Underground and he's in office to, you know, I mean, it was complete nonsense, but it was effective enough. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know that that's going to, my parents are a public school teacher and a scientist. So, you know, I don't know quite as exciting for people.
I mean, I think it's really cool. But also, you know, you're doing something right if Ted Cruz and Tucker Carlson are cheering of your downfalls, you know. If you're not on their team, then you're on the right team.
Right.
Okay, let's talk about the current situation. Brooke Jenkins, current district attorney of San Francisco. How are you different from her? And, you know, what are three things? Let's just put out three things. I know you actually had a thread on your Twitter of a list of things that you would do if you were district attorney. But let's list three things that you would do differently than how Brooke Jenkins is currently doing her job.
Yeah, you know what I think, just from a running the office side of things, has been pretty difficult for people inside the office. And that impacts the criminal functioning of the criminal justice system, which is, you know, I think Ms. Jenkins was a line prosecutor, and, you know, I don't really know, she had some scandals there, but she didn't, I think, come into it with a lot of management experience, a lot of leadership experience. And so we had things like going 10 days without even meeting the staff. I think what the district attorney's office really needs right now is a good, strong leader and manager, and somebody who can work with everybody and somebody who, you know, can sit down with people who may disagree with you, may think, I don't agree with that, but also, you know, have it out, talk it through, figure out, you know, if their concerns are valid. I'm somebody who, I'm always happy to be proved wrong. You know, not everything I know, I don't have all of the right answers. And so, you know, life is about learning and growing. And so I really think, you know, one of the key things from the outset is to come in and be a good leader, support your team, support the people that are in the courtrooms every day doing the work, and make sure they feel good about being part of an organization that has really just the highest level of responsibility, right? You are responsible for doing justice and accountability, right? And so when there are crimes, when people are hurt, you have to hold people accountable. But to do so, you got to do it in a fair and just way. You can't have that sort of win at all costs mentality that I think has historically hampered community relations with district attorney's office, right? When we see all this news about prosecutors cheating to win, you know, convicting innocent people and people, you know, having their sentences overturned by courts, people lose faith. And I think, you know, one of the reasons that I seriously started thinking about it was about maybe four Fridays ago, the interim DA released a list of new hires. And one of those new hires, Don Dubain, was somebody who was known to have ethical issues in his past, not good ethics, and a reputation for protecting cops who had done crimes. To me, that sent the wrong message to everybody in the office that the win at all costs mentality is the one that the office is going to support. And so, you know, if you have people with serious ethical issues in leadership, that shows the whole office that we're not going to hold you accountable. It's okay, just win. And that's not how a prosecutor's office should run. So, you know, management is really important, supporting the team. And then, I mean, the primary goal of the district attorney's office is to do justice while enforcing public safety. And, you know, really, this is one of the big arguments that I think people got into over the last few years with the previous district attorney. We had the facts on one side and the data that showed that, you know, crime, most types of crime was actually falling under his tenure. You know, we had the nation, the same trends as national trends around gun violence, which is a huge problem. And that's something we need to address. But that was happening nationally. And I think there's a lot of reasons why it might have been happening: the pandemic, mental health, the easy access to guns. But, you know, you have to, there, even if all the facts say crime is going down, when somebody's in front of the TV or social media and just seeing car break-ins, robberies, you know, all sorts of, you know, I remember there was a famous, that got into the national news, a guy stuffed a bunch of stuff in a bag in Walgreens and rode a bike out. And it was the biggest story in the world, not in the world, but in the country, right? And people, how do you live in San Francisco? It seems so dangerous. But, you know, the reality is that even though our crime rates are low, people feel that. You know, you have to give, you have to acknowledge that people right now feel unsafe. It's not everybody, but it's enough people, right? And so you got to talk to people about how you're going to work to improve public safety, how you're going to work to improve accountability. And, you know, it's really got to be accountability for all, right? It can't just be accountability for low-level shoplifting or drug cases. It's got to go from the, you know, we have a big problem with wage theft, right? Working people are having their money taken away by employers. Why is that not a bigger priority for prosecutors across the country, right? It's working people. It's the food on their table. And it seems, or at least this is the impression, is, you know, police and prosecutors will protect Louis Vuitton and CVS, Walgreens, but, you know, they're not there for the working people. And so being willing to go after employers, being willing to go after corporate crime, I think is another way that I think is important to restore integrity and independence to the district attorney's office. The third thing I think I would change, and I know I'm giving long explanations, but
please do.
It's really to, you know, right now there's a feeling that this town is in one party rule, and coming out of the mayor's office, who's appointed everybody, all the positions that have been recalled, as well as some other positions that are vacated. And, you know, we have such a real and really horrible history of corruption in this town. I mean, we had 10 public officials either indicted or removed from office in the last few years that are all tied to the same group of Democratic moderates and the mayor's office. And so, you know, that I think is one really sharp distinction between myself and the interim DA, is that I don't answer to anybody. I don't answer to the mayor's office. I just, in as district attorney, I'll be answering to the people. That's what I did on the police commission. You know, I did a lot of work building relations with the community, the people that were interested in police reform. And I think, you know, independence from this machine that I think is when we look out on the streets and we talk about all of these issues before, these are City Hall problems. And why is City Hall not fixing them? Why was, you know, the focus on first the district attorney, and now I see they're actually, you know, some of the conservatives are saying, where are the police? Why aren't they, you know, they've been watching crime happen and not do anything. But, you know, and the crime is a law enforcement issue, but the underlying issues, like I said before, the unhoused, substance abuse, and mental health, those are City Hall problems. And until we address those, I think people are going to continue to be unhappy with the conditions on our street.
You mentioned that you worked in the police commission for 4 years up until this past April. What would be your relationship with the SFPD moving forward? I know, you know, maybe you've been a little critical of SFPD, but yeah, so how would that relationship be if you do become the next DA?
Right. So, you know, the thing I learned over 4 years on the police commission is there's some really good people in the department. There's good people that have come through, gotten great training, gotten great support, and are looking towards a new way of policing, what we call 21st century policing. That's what all the Department of Justice reforms we went through were about. And but there's this also this old guard that's connected to the police union that doesn't believe they have to do their jobs, doesn't believe they have to be responsive to the people of San Francisco, keep getting caught up in criminal conduct and racist scandals. I mean, there's been two just this year. And that culture needs to change. And that's, you know, when people say, oh, you know, weren't you hard on the cops? Weren't you, you know, too tough on them? Look, I can't change who they decide to put in the police, their union, and who they decide to put into leadership. But if they want to be part of this San Francisco community, you have to respect the community. You have to be part of it. You have to, you know, exist in it, and not just, you know, come into town, make your money, and be indifferent to the people here and leave. You know, and that's not the majority of officers. That's not the majority of command staff, but it's there. And I'll continue to criticize it, because until we fix that, you know, the district attorney's office has to rely on the police to do the majority of the arrests and bringing cases to the district attorney's office. But if there's, you know, incidents like we've seen in the news where they're watching crimes occur or not being responsive or telling, you know, for the past 2.5 years, I don't know how many people told me they had a car break in or a burglary or a garage burglary. And they said, yeah, you know, the cops showed up and they said, you know, we'll take a report, but the district attorney's not going to do anything. And so they just, and that's, you know, even Heather Knight from the Chronicle has written about 4 stories about it now. That culture needs to change. We deserve better in San Francisco. We deserve, you know, really top-notch professionals in law enforcement. And I, you know, if I have to criticize to get there, you know, it's. I hope people will know that it's my love of the city that causes me to want better for it.
Now, I'm going to ask you the same question, but instead of talking about SFPD, I'm going to talk about Mayor London Breed. And if you want to give me the same answer, that's fine too. But yeah, so, you know, how would your relationship be with Mayor London Breed if you were to become the next DA?
Well, you know, I think you have to work with all of the stakeholders and all of the partners. And you have to have relationships and work together. I think, you know, I have been open about criticizing the mismanagement and corruption, but, you know, we can all do better. We can all start over. I don't believe that, you know, people are inherently bad. I think people do some bad things. But, you know, I'm willing, and I imagine the mayor's willing to give each other the chance to work together for the city. And you know, put aside any differences in the past and focus on making this city a city that people can be proud of, which I already am, but I know that there's, you know, people are beat down by being constantly attacked and having the city attacked. So we can do better. I'll be happy to work with the mayor. I'll be happy to work with the police to do so. But, you know, I will hold accountable those who break the law.
No, totally. Totally agree. Last question, comment here. Where can people find more about John Homosaki? This is your time to put any kind of social media handles, websites. Let us hear it.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty wild. We came into this race 3 weeks ago today and didn't have a plan, but in 3 weeks, we put together finally some infrastructure. I just got delivered 10,000 window signs. I'm on Twitter, social media at Homosaki Law. The website is homosaki4da.com. And, you know, people should feel I'm an accessible guy. Even if somebody's mad at me, but has a good point to raise or has a real concern to raise, I'm going to have that conversation. I'm not just going to be like, oh, you know, you're not part of, you know, I don't know you or something like that. I think, and that's what, you know, I really want out of the job in city government is the people of San Francisco to feel like they're respected, that their needs are being met. So, you know, I look forward to the rest of this campaign. I look forward to a good, positive, focused campaign, and hopefully things will go my way in November.
Totally. Thank you so much for your time. John Homosaki, candidate for San Francisco District Attorney. Best of luck to you, and thank you for your time.
As the podcast of the community newspaper El Tecolote, we think hearing from you is important. So please leave us a comment, rating, and share our podcast to other members of the community. Thank you.